relentless generosities of spirit. Do we see or get to know them? Dr. Zeal Okejiri has and wrote a book with that title, sharing how a life that began in the horrific midst of a Nigerian civil war can end up knowing there is indeed something behind what we see with our eyes. Zeal will be speaking at the Barnes & Noble in Boulder, July 13th at 11 a.m. and here now. So stay tuned. I'm Robin Clare with Tributaries. Zeal, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Great name. Is that your original name,
Zeal? That's my name.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yes. Well, you became spiritual by tradition, it seems. You come from a long line of Nigerian shaman.
Well, yes, I was very fortunate to be born into my family. My dad was definitely very well versed in the culture and the lineage that I came from, which is a very powerful healing lineage, and what the Westerners may call shamanism. Yeah.
Not only coming from a lineage of shaman, but there are other reasons why you were afforded a unique experience growing up. And it seems odd that having lived through a civil war, that you were actually able to have such an experience of being able to leave Nigeria and have an education outside of that country. And maybe you can share a little bit of your younger life that led you into where you are now.
Well, as you know, that would be a very long story, but I'll condense it as much as possible. I was born in Afikpo village in the eastern part of Nigeria. And like you mentioned, we did have a civil war that started in 1967 and went all the way to 1970. And I was a young boy then, but I remember the details of the civil war so vividly because it had such an impact on me. And it is a civil war in which more than 1 million people died by starvation alone. Not even those who were killed by bullets and other means, but just starved to death. And it was a horrific experience for me. And actually, the title of my book, which is Relentless Generosities of Spirit, that's where it came from, because we were able to survive that war. People always talk about gratitude. But during the war, when we were faced with multiple air raids, planes coming unannounced to bomb our refugee camp and other our homes, just to wake up alive every day was reason to be grateful. You know, it was really a very difficult situation, very challenging situation. But it helped me to put life in perspective.
Certainly, yes. You were coming from a very baseline, weren't you?
Yes, yes, I was. It helped me to put life in perspective. And during that time, of course, if you had told me that I'd be doing a radio interview in Boulder one day, I would have said that you're out of your mind.
Right. You know, it's interesting because reading your book is so different than even hearing you speak about that initial experience during the Civil War, because when I'm reading it, it's even more of an impression than hearing someone talk about it. Or I've heard stories, obviously, I don't really watch TV, but on radio about Civil War in various countries. And you're impressed by it and you feel empathy about it. But something in your book, it's just even more striking to read, because I guess you just pause. You just are overwhelmed that people are actually experiencing this. And then I was thinking, I had met you before I read your book, and what I remembered from you was this light coming out of you and out of your eyes and in your smile. So it's quite profound to go from baseline to where you've come to.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you. You know, when we hear about wars happening in faraway places, it's very difficult for us to relate. to relate to the atrocities of war. And that's why I always plead to the countries of the world to make sure that they exhaust every means of resolving international conflicts peacefully before resorting to war. Because oftentimes, in fact, all the time, the victims of war had nothing to do with the reasons that caused the war. They didn't have anything to do with the quarrels or the negotiations that resulted to war. Like in my village, the elderly, the young people, when the bomb began to fall, they were wondering what was going on. What did we do? They were asking. What have we done? They didn't even know what they did to deserve the bombs.
Yes, and obviously it was nothing that they had done. So what a great lesson in don't take anything personally.
Yeah, yeah.
A hard one, but
it's a very hard one.
Often during these times, you related that communication technology, of course, was non-existent. And to take learning very basic spiritual lessons one step further, I wonder if you experienced obvious synchronicities that were going on. You were used to having the technology and then it was taken away, and yet you probably got to a point where you could suss out things that were that you needed to know.
Yeah. You know, they say that necessity is the mother of invention. That's exactly what the world was all about. We improvised everything. When we ran away from our village, we didn't have any cooking pots and pans. But I had a younger brother who was a baby that we ran away as refugees with. And we had a washing basin that my mother used to wash him. Well, that basin became our cooking pot. That was our cooking pot,
right.
And it was used for everything,
right?
You know? And so we improvised with everything, and we learned new ways to do things. And in terms of communication, when you go to the marketplace, which is like a flea market, a swap meet, we don't have the conventional market that we have here in the States. But then you meet people and you begin to ask questions. Have you seen such and such a person? Have you heard of such and such a person? They might, you know, you might just be in luck, and they say, oh, yeah. In fact, we saw them 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Well, can you tell them that I am her daughter, I am her son, I am living in such and such a place, you know? So that's how we communicated. In the case of my grandmother, I was very close to my grandmother. I loved her very dearly. And we ran away from our village. She ran away from her village. So for almost 3 years, we didn't know whether she was alive or dead. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know whether we were alive or dead. And in the marketplace is where the connection was made. Yeah. Somebody said that they had seen my grandmother, and we let that person know that we are still alive, to let her know that. And that's how we eventually connected just before the war ended. And it was really a very, very happy meeting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, Zeal, I know that you left Nigeria when you were 15 with your father to go on a trip, and then you ended up studying in the United States, became a business major in school, and then a successful businessman. Then you circled back around and came more into being a spiritual teacher and author. What do you think, either at the time or now, about your dad starting his own religion? Nigeria was a country that was quite heavily influenced by Christianity and Islam. And your dad, did he just have enough and say, come on, kids, we're doing our own thing from here on out? What was that like? And what did you think about that?
Well, you know, my dad was a very special man in many ways. And I have a tremendous admiration for him, because he was able to get a lot done during his lifetime. He started off as a school teacher, and then he became a Christian minister. Then he went to England and became a medical doctor, and then he integrated everything together. And he was a person who, when I who was ahead of his time in many ways, and he was open to studying many different religions of the world, from Islam to Christianity to Buddhism, all the isms he could get his hands on. And but he never forgot our lineage, the African tradition, or our traditional spirituality, if you would. So he was able to integrate all of them, and he was able to find truth, what he considered to be truth for himself. And the other teachings didn't seem to offer that truth that he felt that he had, and he decided to form a religion to offer his own teachings. And that's precisely what he did.
It would seem a Nigerian tradition, especially related to the lineage of shaman, would be very experiential and have that be the key piece, which is where I think a lot of religions have kind of, they moved into teachings rather than experience.
Yeah, experience is very important. Many times people depend on beliefs. People depend on philosophy and dogma. But the key to spirituality is personal experience with spirit. And that's what I talk about in my book, because while I have talked about my father's path, my own path is the light and sound current. I have been involved in this path for a very long time, more than 20 years. And in the path of the light and sound, you are connecting with the very purest life force itself. And it is called the light and sound current because you are able to experience, the key word here is experience, the light and sound of spirit. When you close your eyes and you do the spiritual exercise or the mantra, and after some time of doing this, you can actually begin to see the light, different colors we have, which has different meanings, through your spiritual center in between your eyebrow. You can actually see this. And you can actually hear the inner sound inside of you, booming inside of you. And you can feel your whole body vibrating as this spiritual energy overwhelms you. Mm-hmm. So this is experiential. And as this thing continues, what is happening is that it is cleansing you or purifying you from inside out. And as the cleaning continues over many years, then the light of spirit begins to shine right through you. You see? And not only that, then what the other thing that happens is that your heart begins to open. The heart begins to open more and more to unconditional love. And at this point, while this is going on, you don't even know the degree of change that is happening inside of you. But your friends will tell you.
Yes, yes.
Your friends will tell you you have this nice energy around you. Your friends people will resonate with you for no apparent reason, because this energy, you cannot hide from it. Nobody can hide from the energy that is running them. It's impossible. So this energy, so wherever you are, you become an instrument for divine spirit, doing whatever it wants to do through you, without you necessarily having to do anything whatsoever on your own. This is why you practice it.
In that process, things fall away without you even realizing it. Things you would be concerned about, or things that would make you angry or grab your attention and take you off on a tangent, just naturally do seem to fall away. And yet the world's belief systems and ideologies run so deep. I'm wondering if there's one of those subtleties that you can speak about right now that had a hold on you for a while and you weren't even aware of it.
One thing that happened to me is my level of acceptance increased dramatically. My ability to just see things and just say, yes, I accept it. It's just a part of life. My ability to do that increased exponentially. Before, I was resistant to things not being the way they should have been.
According to me.
According to the way I see life, according to the way that I feel it should have been. They were not just being that way. So after many years of training, I am really able to honestly accept it just the way it is. Much more than I have ever done in my whole life.
And the beauty of that is when you do, or when we can accept something, whatever it is we've been resisting dissipates or
it
goes
dissipates.
Away. It seems funny to say because it's so obvious that the resistance is the problem.
It is the problem. But while we are resisting, we don't even realize it because we are in it until it has been removed from us. Now, the other thing that you also let go is a lot of fear. We carry so much fear with us. Some come from our infancy. Some come from other lifetimes. Some come, you know, from adulthood. A lot of these things hold you back so much. Spirit of itself doesn't hold anybody back. It's just hoping that you let go so you can experience more of it. But because we have all these other things that are camouflaging our light, it is very hard for us to live the life of light that we want to live. As you do these spiritual exercises, then it begins to clean away much of this dirt, if you want to call it that, that these layers that cover the light, and the light begins to shine through. And sometimes you just feel so happy for no apparent reason. Nothing happened, but you're just so happy. It's just like children. They don't have much to worry about. You know, you have to take care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, how are you going to be able to take care of other people? Mm-hmm. So it's really important. Your first priority should be to take care of yourself, to enable you to take care of other people
yes.
that you want to take care of. That's very important.
You mention in your book that Nigerian initiations are or were quite rigorous, but they have been changing. And I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit about that tradition and how you see it as part of a worldwide trend or not, and the implications of that.
Yes. And when we say Nigerian initiations, I have to be very specific. In my book, I was talking about initiations in my village. Now, in Nigeria, there are multiple cultures within one country. We have an initiation into manhood, and no person who is a male can get married in my village without undergoing this initiation. This initiation is like a journey from childhood to a state of psychological independence. You are no longer relying on your parents or other people to make up your mind for you. You are now becoming a self-sufficient human being. And in the days of my grandfather, sometimes you go and live in the wilderness for anywhere from 6 months to a year to prove yourself. And many times the candidates for initiations don't come back to the village because they died in the process. After the 6 months is over, after the year is over, and everybody's waiting for, the families are waiting for their boy. Well, he was a boy when he went in for their man to come back from the wilderness is really, really a tremendous honor to see your young man returning from this initiation. There's all kinds of festivities, there's drumming, there's dancing, and it's done during the harvest season. But then, of course, if your young man doesn't make it back, well, it is not so fun for the family. But things have changed over time because of the encroachment of Western civilization. Now it has been reduced to sometime 2 days or an overnight stay, and then you pay some money for the balance of it. So things have changed a lot.
And what do you see as the impact of that?
Well, the culture is not as strong as it used to be because there's been so much infiltration of modernization. We now can get CNN in our village.
If you can memorize an hour of CNN, you're a man.
And you know, the green is always looks appears better on the other side.
Right. Gifts of spirit. That's a big theme.
Yes.
With what you do.
Yes.
Obviously, if you're in the middle of a civil war and you wake up alive, you recognize it.
Absolutely. It's easier to recognize during that phase.
Speaking of gifts of the spirit, is there a story you can share with us?
There was in this village, there was a well where people come to draw water from. And of course, you tie a rope to the bucket and you put it inside the well and you draw water from it. Well, the well was built on the way to the marketplace. And this one day, a man was walking to the market. Nobody knows exactly what happened, but he fell into the well. And he's down there praying to God, please help me, send me someone to help me, please. And there was this village warrior. He was also a medicine man, a shaman. And he always goes to the market very late in the afternoon. Everybody gets there by 8 o'clock. He doesn't get there till 2:30, 3 o'clock, because he has a lot of stuff to do at home. He needs to communicate with the ancestors and so on, so they keep him quite busy. Anyway, he was going to the market, and he heard this echo coming. Somebody, please help me. So he walks towards the well, and he sees this small man inside the well waving. He told the man not to worry, that he's going to go back to the village and look for a rope to throw down to him so he can come up. So the man in the well was very thankful, thanking God, thanking his ancestors for answering his prayers. So the medicine man went to the village, knocking from door to door. Eventually, he got a big rope, and he's dragging this rope back to the well, and he's sweating. Africa, it's a very hot climate. So he eventually gets there, and the man in the well, of course, was so happy to see him. And he says, look, I'm going to begin to lower this rope to you. Let me know when you have it. He begins to lower it until the man in the well says, yes, I've got it. I have the rope. And he was so happy. So the shaman says to him, I'm going to count to three. And once I count to three, I'm going to begin to pull you up. So hold on tight. The man says, no problem. So he counts one, two, and three. Just before he begins to pull the man out, the man in the well says, wait a minute. Wait. He says, what is it? He says, I have two questions for you. He says, you're going to be kidding. You've been crying for what, hours? And now you have questions? He says, yes, it's an important question. I really need to ask you these questions. He says, number one, can you please explain to me how I happened to fall into the well? He says, you're going to be joking. I have no idea. Are you kidding me? So he says, okay, fine. If you don't want to answer my question, I have the second question. If I allow you to pull me out of this well, can you guarantee me that I will never fall into another well again in my entire life? And the shaman couldn't believe it. Here is someone who's been crying for hours. Now he has questions to ask before he accepts the help. So he says to the man, look, if I were you, I will allow someone with a rope to pull me up. And when I get to the surface, I can begin to figure out and analyze these issues for myself. So it ties in with this concept, willingness to accept the gifts of spirit. Sometimes in life we're praying because we're lonely, we want a new relationship, and we're praying for spirit to do something about it. And it brings us a brand new person. What do we do? Instead of accepting this gift, we're going into fault finding with pettiness. You put the box of cereal in the wrong cabinet of the kitchen. We begin to fight about trivial matters and ignoring the gift of spirit. Sometimes it's a pet that is brought into our life to help us attract what we need. But we refuse to acknowledge these gifts of spirit because many times the gift of spirit are disguised. And they don't come in the packaging that we expect it to come in. But until you accept this package and open it, you never know what is inside. So the first step is accepting this gift, and then you know what the spirit had in mind.
Zeal, you were speaking about the light and sound exercise. Could you briefly describe what that is?
Yes, it's really a very simple exercise that anyone can use to cleanse or purify themselves. And the word that we use is the word HU, H-U. And the pronunciation is like H-U-E, hue. And this word is an ancient word, a sacred word, and an ancient word for God. It has been around for thousands of years, perhaps 5,000 years, and is being used by groups all over the world, from Egyptian mystery schools to the beautiful Tibetan melodic mantras, and Sufism, and more recently groups like Ekinkar and Santmat and others use it as well. So it's been around for a long time. And basically, you sit down with your hands resting on your lap, and you can face your hands up, which symbolically says that you are willing to accept the gifts of spirit. Or you can just relax. Then you put your attention on the spot between your eyebrow, which is one of the energy processing centers of the body. And you quietly begin to chant or sing this word, hue. And it goes like this. And you just lovingly, softly sing this word for about 15 to 20 minutes. In the morning when you wake up from sleep and before you retire to bed. And when you are chanting this, you are essentially saying, may thy will be done. Thy will is going to be done anyway, so you might as well.
Dr. Zeal Okejeri. He can be reached at drzeal.com for any guest information. To listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. On iTunes, it's Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.